Hey, it's Chris. Welcome back to Between Dreams podcast. This show chats with people who are not only dreaming about things, but making them happen. And today's guest is a little bit different than maybe the typical guest. You know, as listeners of the show know, we often talk about creating stuff, you know, the on-camera, the people that you're seeing creating the things. Today, we're going maybe a little bit behind the scenes with Rick Cohen, a creative director. And this episode particularly, I think, is really cool for me. I love the episodes that I don't really know the guests that well, because so many of the guests on the podcast have been like my friends. And today, we're friends, but we haven't really chatted very much, just from seeing a few things on LinkedIn. And that's exciting to me because I don't need to act like I'm asking questions. I can actually ask questions. So that being said, Rick Cohen, thanks so much for being here. And let's start, since there is a lot that you're doing that I'm actually not sure where all those pieces come together, I'll leave your intro up to you. So do you have your 30-second elevator explanation of what the stuff that you're actually working on is all about?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I'm Rick Cohen, creative director, currently working in advertising and marketing. And I think it's kind of a big name. A lot of people, well, it can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, right? You hear advertising, might think ad sales or the people who annoy you with banner ads. And that's kind of what I'm fighting against every day, right? People don't like advertising. It interrupts your favorite shows and interrupts your favorite content or media. But it's also what pays for all those things. So my goal is to create content that is entertaining, connects with the viewer emotionally in some way. If you think about advertising day to day, most of it's pretty bad. Nobody hates advertising more than people working in advertising. So when we think about our favorite ads, you know, the John Lewis stuff out of London for the holiday campaign, or the Apple holiday campaign. It's the holiday, so I got holidays in my mind right now. The stuff that you click through and then want to share with your friends. I was really, really lucky in that my first job in advertising was working on the Dos Equis Most Interesting Man in the World campaign, which back in the day was popular, and people would say, you know, repeat his catchphrase like back to me, like, I don't always drink beer, but when I do, you know, blah, 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 blah. And there's a billion memes. And, I made a bunch of gifts that people are sending back to me, forgetting that I worked on them, which is always fun. I do have to say, I did not invent that campaign. I like totally lucked into it. It was running for like, I think 4 or 6 years by the time I joined the team. And I got to make commercials for 2 years and you know, play around with Facebook, which was brands on Facebook at the time was somewhat of a new thing. We had launched the brand on Instagram when not a lot of brands were on Instagram. So it started to move from broadcast production into kind of social production, which is fun. This is going on way longer than 30 seconds, so I apologize. But basically what I do in a nutshell is try to create pieces of media that inform the audience about the brand or the product in an entertaining, engaging way. And that's a lot harder to do than just saying, you know, I think of lawyer ads a lot. You see the lawyer ads on the billboards, and they're like, this law firm. I'm like, well, there's nothing that differentiates you from any other law firm, except you have a picture, usually of an old white guy, saying that you should pay him money to represent you for something. That's, you know, it might be effective with media dollars. If you say the same thing enough times, people are going to remember you. But what are they going to remember about you? And what is your brand? And how do you really craft your tone of voice for your brand and make it everlasting? How do you become an Apple or a Nike rather than, you know, that law firm that might have been around for the same amount of time that Apple or Nike has been, but they haven't put in the work into their brand. So
yeah,
it ranges from strategy, to development, to media, to social, to then overseeing productions after you've written the script or had the idea for whatever it is you need to make.
Yeah. So I think there's, if I was listening to this and hearing you say all of those things, I think my initial thing, so the lawyer example is great for like a local business, but yeah, still has dollars, you know, yeah, they're buying billboards. Like they don't have Apple dollars, but
it's not so cheap.
So here's the challenge. I think I'm a lawyer in a city and I'm running billboards and I say, well, yeah, that's easy for you to say. You're working with these national brands that have a lot more zeros behind every conversation that is talking about. But as you said, the strategy of that, so it doesn't come, of course, production is more expensive on a Apple and a Nike everything than it is for a local business. And I think that's understood and expected, but what do you think about that? Like, so where do we start if we are a smaller, you know, or if we're a creator that wants to start building a portfolio so that they can work on these bigger productions and show people like, okay, I'm not just taking photos. I'm not just creating videos. I'm creating stories that the audience connects with. So do you have any thoughts on that of the pushback of, I don't have millions of dollars for this marketing thing, whether I'm a local business or a small creator, how do I start building or how do I start thinking about creating content that actually connects? And as you said there, that key part is creating content, not ads. You know, if every ad was a piece of content that people wanted to share, people would approach things a lot differently than most brands and businesses are doing.
Yeah.
You jam on that wherever you
want. No, absolutely. Because it doesn't start. And that's the difference between media and advertising, right? Advertising is, you know, media is one arm of it. But the bulk of the work we do, just you work in video, so much of it is pre-production, right? And it comes down to the same thing for developing your brand, right? You have to identify what makes you different from the competition, right? What is your USP, your unique selling proposition, right? Or the RTB, the reason to believe. And that kind of is the beginning of branding, right? So you're a videographer, and you can do any kind of videos, right? I have no doubt that any videographer worth their salt can light a scene, can capture good content. But when I look at photographers, videographers, and their portfolios, the ones that really stick out to me that I feel like have the most success are those who have really identified what they like to shoot and they found their niche. So they say, I'm an outdoor adventure photographer, and they have a channel dedicated to outdoor adventure photos or videos. Or, you know, I know a guy I used to work with started a huge video production company down in Atlanta, focusing on law firm videos. And that's all they do. They make the best videos for law firms. And they differentiate their clients, because now we're coming back to, we're merging the two questions you asked. What they do is they really tell the lawyer's story. They get down and sit down with an interview and go, what drives you? What makes you get out of bed every day as a lawyer? And then all of a sudden you put that piece of video on your website, if you're the lawyer, you put it on your website, and you have now differentiated yourself from every other law firm out there, because one, they don't even have videos. It just says, yes, we do law and we can represent you. Please give us a call. And two, now you actually understand why this lawyer's in business. And if you like them, like their story, then you can give them a call. And if you don't, you don't have to, right? It also helps work with the kind of clients you want to be working with.
Yeah. So I'll keep playing the role of the end person and say, yeah, but I got to sell stuff.
You got to sell
stuff. If I spend this many thousands or whatever dollars, I still got to sell stuff. So I'll play the devil's advocate of here, of knowing full well of what, you know, the punchline is, make stuff that people want to watch. They'll be naturally inclined to want to buy your things. I don't work as much with, you know, global brands, but even in that world, why is there still some pushback of, yeah, but we, that question of like, yeah, but we got to sell stuff. Like it, we have to push, like, is it a desperation thing where it's, or is it a fear thing that there is not faith in, like, it's almost like a longer play versus a shorter.
Absolutely is a longer play. It's something that doesn't happen overnight, but it happens through iterations and iterations and media and media and media. And you don't need a lot of money to do it, right? It can be as simple as your website or something clever, right? An iPhone for a lot of small brands has a lot of what you need to get started, at least in terms of photos or videos, right? But you can go even deeper. There was a recently, I think it was last week, a dating app that was launching, and they sent out one of their employees with a sign on the street. I forget what it was. I mean, I'm going to misattribute or misquote it here, but it was basically like, ask me for a date, right? And it looked like this woman was holding a sign on the street asking for dates. I'm probably butchering the actual story. It cost nothing but a marker and some poster board. And they got a ton of press for it because there was also, I think they had two offices, one in London, one in New York, and people started seeing this. And then they started posting about it on the internet. And then they realized that there was two people doing the same thing across the pond. And that's advertising, right? My favorite pieces of advertising are the ones that don't necessarily feel like advertising. When I was at McCann, New York, some of my coworkers, some of the most brilliant people I worked with, developed this concept for a financial institute for State Street Advisors called Fearless Girl. And it was literally a statue placed in front of the bull on Wall Street, this little girl, you know, standing in defiance. And the world went crazy for it. The internet blew up over it, and it was such a powerful statement. People started going down and taking their pictures next to the statue. It ended up becoming a permanent part of New York. They moved it to a different location, but it had a cultural impact that was larger than the statement itself, which was really to advertise a fund they wanted people to invest in. People forgot it was advertising. And you can say there, you know, there's some problems with that, right? When people didn't realize what it was for, the company that paid for it, the company that was advertising, were they getting the value out of it? But you think about impressions and engagement. You know, if they had done a traditional print ad or banner ad, how effective would that really have been? So the point is, you don't need huge media dollars, either in budget of spending on media placement or budget in production to have an effective ad if you really understand what your brand is about and really understand what makes you different from other brands and develop that tone, right? Just because you're advertising a creative concept doesn't mean you're not selling the product. You can absolutely do both. You'll look at a lot of these startups. Quip, the toothbrush maker, right? I think has a really fun, different brand than every other toothbrush maker out there. And they do, I mean, they do social advertising. You know, that's how they got me. I bought one, right? And it was different. It still sold the product, but I understood from looking at it that they were a little more fun. They didn't take themselves so seriously. They're not talking about 4 or 5 dentists. They had a cool design. They had lovely brand colors. They had a great logo. And a message that, you know, it was 5 years ago now, I don't remember, but appealed to me because they identified me as their audience, and it was very effective. Same thing with Fly by Jing, which is a new, have you seen ads for this yet?
Looked no.
My age. It's hot sauce, right? And it just had such cool graphics, and a wonderful story about the founder who went to Asia to like research all these, you know, great ingredients where she was originally from, and brought him back to America to develop this wonderful spice. And it's pretty low risk, and because it's social, it's highly targeted. You don't need big ad dollars, but they spent the time crafting the story. If it had just been like hot sauce, buy my hot sauce, I wouldn't have been interested. It spoke to me. It connected with me emotionally. And that, I think, is the biggest takeaway. You don't have to spend millions. You just have to figure out what's going to connect emotionally with your audience to make an impact. And that will, in turn, translate to sales.
I think the quip thing is interesting because I have a quip toothbrush as well. It's so funny that that's like, it's like the most uninteresting product ever, but we're talking about it because of the cool factor and all of those things. And that's an interesting one, particularly as you said that, I thought of that of, you know, that's a kind of a world where you, I would think like going into that 10 years ago or something, I would be like, well, no, people want that. The name brand toothbrush, they want to really be able to trust the toothbrush, whatever the toothbrush Crest, you know, whatever the toothbrush companies are, that like, you know, the name brand that forever that our parents and their parents, you know, have used this thing. We trust it. We're like, it's scary to try a new thing for our teeth. That
this toothbrush has been passed down from my grandfather to my father, and I'll pass it down to my children, you know.
Yeah.
They identified a hole in the market that wasn't being satisfied. And the product's the same, right? Sure, there's like, you know, it looks different. It's made of aluminum, blah, blah, blah. But it's a toothbrush at the end of the day. But because they were able to brand it, that's the creativity of the brand, they made themselves different and unique and then identified, you know, through that who their target was going to be. And anybody could do that. Now, I do work with global brands, but I also, you know, I've consulted for smaller brands. My wife has a little agency, and I help out there too. And we do work with startups and help them with the same problems, right? Because you can have the best product, but if nobody understands why your product is the best, you won't have those sales. I've experienced in my career where, you know, clients can think, hey, you know, this creative, he wants to make art with our media dollars or our advertising dollars. And that's not, I've always bristled at that misconception a lot, right? Advertising is at its best. Creatives are at its best when we are solving business problems with creativity, right? That's to me, that's really what we're trying to do. And whether that's through branding, logos, colors, fonts, and then all the way up to like media, right? You know, content, commercials, radio, billboards. You can do everything in a unique way if you give a little more pre-production to it, if you give a little more thought at the start about what that brand really is and what it means and how it's going to differentiate you from your competitors.
Yeah, it's something that I've got into some sometimes heated conversations with, you know, in kind of what my background was, live performers and, you know, a lot of like variety acts and magicians and jugglers and people who are really for the art of it. They, you know, are like, oh, this is my art. And, you know, the conversation has often been, you know, you can be an artist or you can be an entertainer. Sometimes you're both, but you have to kind of decide which one you're going to be. And it kind of translates very well to this of, you can be an artist, but that's a little bit more for yourself. You can be, you know, in that world, if you're an entertainer, now you're doing it for the audience and you're doing it for a purpose. And now your guiding principles tell you, if you're an artist, my guiding principles tell me I do this, what makes me happy. If you're an entertainer, my guiding principle is what's making the audience happy. And sometimes I might not get to do the, you know, magic trick that I love the most that no one understands. And I love that, the bridge of those two together.
That's so funny because an artist has a marketable skill, but if you're not marketing it to your audience, then you're not an entertainer, right?
Yeah.
So it's really interesting because Taylor Swift's album just drops. I've been reading a lot about that. She had an interview with Paul McCartney where she said that Paul McCartney had an interview that influenced her about how he plays the hits. He plays for his audience. He might have some new songs, but you know, not everybody can afford a Paul McCartney ticket. So if they're sitting in his audience, he makes sure that he's taking care of them, right? They didn't come to hear his new songs. They came to hear the songs that meant something to them. Again, going back to an emotional connection, right? So he makes sure that he plays his songs that he knows people came to see, as opposed to like some of the more fun stuff he wants to try. You know, I'm not an artist, right? I use art to help tell brand stories, but I'm not a fine artist, right? I will come up with a concept that sometimes we need to contract out artists, and we'll find artists. We'll hire them. We'll, you know, for Dos Equis, we did, you know, those sidewalk paintings, sidewalk chalk in 3D, you know, you stand at the right angle, it looks like you're jumping across them. We hired an artist to do 3 of those across the country. And it was a lot of fun. That's something I could never do. But what I can do is talk about and come up with an idea of why that might be right for the brand to contract this artist and make people seem more interesting in the world in photos they can take that for themselves.
Yeah, I love that. So let's circle this all back, and we'll kind of start to tie this all up here, because this is awesome stuff. So let's circle that back to, because I think it'll be very interesting and maybe a challenge to you to tie this all up. So say some of the, you know, as you say, you are working with artists and performers, whether that be a model or an actor or a sidewalk chalk artist or a, you know, any type of talent. What in that side of, you know, talked about at the beginning of like a creator can start building that portfolio. What is the most attractive to you that inspires you? Because there's a lot of sidewalk chalk artists in the world, and there you had to decide, pick one of them. So in that sense of whether it's a sidewalk chalk artist or whatever, what is something that makes them stand out to you where you know, okay, they're not just an artist for themselves, they're going to be, you know, an entertainer, which their audience is maybe you or the, you know. Yeah, you get it.
Yeah, there's a few things, right? So it all starts with the idea, right? We have this idea. Hey, wouldn't it be cool to do this? And I actually think this is an idea that I think was, for this specific example, that I have to give credit to the team. I think he was already in motion by the time I joined the team. So I want to make sure I don't get any credit that I don't deserve. But for this example, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we allowed people to show their interesting side by, taking photos of themselves in scenes out in the world. We call this an activation, right? It's not commercial. It's not a TV, you know, it's not radio. It's an activation out in the world. Okay. So how are we going to do this? Well, can we build something in real life? Right. Client says that that's not a budget. We can't do that. Okay. What else can we do? Do we print, take photos and print out a scene? Maybe. Well, what's an interesting way, and this all comes back to the brand for Dos Equis, it's the most interesting brand, right? What's an interesting way to help show people, to give people that opportunity that they're interested, right? Okay, well, we keep seeing this stuff pop up on the internet. It's this great chalk artist done in 3D perspective. It's so cool. All right, let's start Googling. And literally, should we use the internet? Like, who does this? There's a couple artist reps companies out there. That, you know, agents, stuff like that, that we can contact through our Rolodex and see if they have anybody. And we'll start to get portfolios and we'll start to get websites and samples. And we'll take a look. We go, okay, who has the right style that matches what we have in our heads, right? Who's not only capable, but who already has the experience? And that's why I think we're talking about videographers doing, you know, outdoor adventurers, why it's so important to really pick a lane, even if you're great at everything, to pick a lane, because for guys like me, it helps us identify who has the experience in the exact thing we're going for, right? So, you know, I have a lot of friends who are photographers that I'm confident they could do any kind of photography. They understand light and photography, right? But it's a hard sell to a client who maybe isn't visual. It's not their job. That's why agencies exist. That's why guys like me have a job. To make them feel secure that we've gone with somebody who can do it and they're not wasting their money. So having that proof in the pudding, like of their website, of their portfolio, being like, hey, this is our concept. This is what we pitch. And here are 3 different artists who you can see can match that style that we've been talking about for the, I mean, these projects can go on for months from, you know, inception to production. So we've been talking about this for 3 months. Hey, here's a few examples of people we think we can take. And then we'll have a conversation with them. They're like, hey, this is what we're thinking. Can you do it? Do you have time? Are you within budget? And then it just comes down to a very frank conversation with our clients and being like, we think this person is the best for, you know, X, Y, and Z. And if they're not available, then there's this backup and we think she's great as well. So it's a lot less. It's interesting because artists, photographers, you know, people reach out to me all the time and I'm really the wrong guy. Well, you want to be talking to our production department who kind of has all these names and portfolios on some bookmark tab for when we need it, because it doesn't start with, hey, I'm a photographer, would love to do a campaign with you. It starts with our client will give us a brief. I'm like, hey, we need to tell people about this new toothbrush we're making. We would love some photography, maybe some motion. What do you guys think? And we'll go, let's pull a couple photographers' books. Let's see who's out there. And, it, you know, does that match the vision for the campaign we've been talking about the whole time? And like, again, like it's not just these big photography, like, you know, chalk art with multi-million budgets. We do the same type of thinking when we do brochures, when we do sell sheets, when we do websites, you know, especially, you know, with the little agency that we have. Can I plug it?
Yeah, that's
breakfast. Breakfast.agency. You can find us. There's still building out the site, but we're working with some other clients that we're doing all this little stuff or trade show booths, you know, all ladder back up to this core concept we have about what this brand really stands for, right? What is our look and feel? And then it translates across all media and we will find the right, we'll either do it ourselves or we'll find the right photographer or designer or artist or whatever the need may be to give a cohesive look across the brand that also differentiates from every other brand out there. And that doesn't matter if you're an artist, if you're a performer, you know, on the street, or you're a law firm, right? Think about the statue performers, which I've always found fascinating, because everybody finds their own take, right? They all have their own version of what kind of statue they are and what the gimmick is, right? I don't know if gimmick's the right word. I don't want to insult any of the performers who have to magically stand still for 8 hours a day, which I could never do. But like, you know, there's always, when somebody drops that dollar in the bucket, what do they do? Right. And how do you surprise people, you know, every time with something they haven't seen before? Cause we're all kind of familiar with this type of performance now.
Yeah. And it's always, this type of thing is always easier said than done, I think, especially for people that come from art world, but hearing it from a little bit from these different angles has been super cool. And, yeah, I think it's super beneficial. I think there's people that are listening that are on both sides of it, video people, creative people, and performers. And I think that was like just a perfect wrap up of like, at the end of the day, you got to know who you're talking. Just like when you're creating a piece of content or an advertisement, like you kind of need to know who you're talking to, and that will guide what you do. So it's like an interesting thing, and it sounds so simple, and like almost no one is actually like doing it. They say, you know, it's like, so that was awesome.
I'm so glad. It's been such a pleasure. Yeah, you perfectly summed up advertising or marketing or whatever it is, whatever you want to call creativity, in a commercial sense, is the space between who you are as a business or a performer, whatever it is, and your audience, right? That Venn diagram, where they overlap.
Yeah, amazing. Well, we're on your lunch break and I promise to keep it short, and we just hit 30 minutes. So I'm gonna let you go. Appreciate you jumping in. And you wanna hit anything else that you want to guide people to if they're like, you know, inspired by this, or send people to check out more or connect with you in any way?
You know, the best way to reach me, I'm on Instagram, is just Rick Cohen, or through the company website, breakfast.agency.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And it got some ideas specifically for me churning in my head. So I know people listening are going to have the same. So that's awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.